Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to Word Goblins, as per usual. It's Wednesday, 4 p.m. And as you know, Word Goblins is a show about buzzwords, pop culture, and the internet through the decades with me and Tasha.
Oh, you didn't introduce us as hostile Word Goblins this time.
I know. I'm just feeling tired.
Yeah, I was saying earlier today that my brain kind of feels like a barn on fire right now. And so hopefully we can get through this show without mumbling, getting too mealy-mouthed. Because every time I feel like my brain is on fire, I just start like garbling my words, which is ironic.
I know.
For this show.
What is life if not irony?
This is the ironic Word Goblins episode.
Where we're just going to be very meta.
Raising our eyebrows at everything.
Yes. I realize I didn't introduce myself. I'm Henna, and we are talking... Actually, I should also do a lanyard ring, which we always do. This is CADR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Han Kaminim. Speaking Musqueam people, you're here with tired goblins.
Tired little goblins. And you know why we're tired? We're tired because we're talking about the language of fashion trends. Mm-hmm. And who could not be tired at this, you know, trying to dive into this topic? Because we're talking about all of the core suffixes, and we're talking about a whole host slew of aesthetics that have flown by on a not even weekly but daily basis. And I think feeling tired is the emotion for this, because who could possibly keep up / who wants to keep up / why are we trying to keep up? But we're going to try and talk about this, because at its core, wow, we're talking about words that we use to describe, you know, fashion in general. And this has happened my entire life, and times before me. We've found ways to describe what people are dressing like and why. It just feels a little different now, I would say.
For sure. Tasha asking the existential questions. What are we? Why are we? And who are we? I'm
just feeling emotional.
Emotional, little, tired, barn on fire?
Burner brain.
Before I forget, we did open our show with three songs. Yeah. The first one was called At the Core by the band Witch Fever. And the second song that I played was Tasha's pick, called Mansions No One Wants to Buy for Any Price.
By Lauren Bosfield.
Mm-hmm. And the third song that you folks heard a little bit of was called Burn the Witch by Pink Shift. And yeah, we are going to try to dissect the million bajillion cores. And truly, it was going down a rabbit hole, and I just came out more confused than ever. And I am not embarrassed to admit it. It was a struggle. Wow, this topic in my brain was, as Tasha said, yeah, let's talk about fashion and different aesthetics. But then it turned into little subgenres of like cores versus aesthetic versus aura versus, actually not aura, who uses aura except your mom anymore, but really core, the battle of core versus aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually fascinating.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember a couple episodes ago where I got on my soapbox and claimed that I'm tired of trend reporting.
Yes.
And I was particularly annoyed that it feels like, due to short-form video content, its prevalence, we seem to be talking about every single little trend that like young people are interested in. And obviously, your teens and even your early 20s are a time when you're trying on a different person, like personality all the time, and you're trying on different ways of being in the world, and you're figuring your stuff out. And so I was like, do we need to ceaselessly keep an eye on what the teens are doing? Like, is this necessary reporting here? And I think I was a little off in my judgment at that time because I was like, oh, this is just a thing that happens. We all go through phases when we're in our teens and our 20s and probably still through your 30s, to be honest. And I don't think it's so much that we just need to stop reporting on it. I think the fact that so many trends are being churned out on an hourly basis is an interesting shift in culture. And the fact that we have so many is not just because we have a keen eye on trends, but rather that like there are other forces behind it. Because certainly I can look back to like very few and sparse millennial trends from when I was a kid, like the hipster purgatory moment and like emo and probably a bunch of others that I'm forgetting. There's like trends on Tumblr that were popular in an aesthetic sense, like C-punk. And I think all those things had long lifespans. What we're looking at now is short lifespans. And so it's not so much like, let's just stop reporting on what the kids are into, and more like, can we actually talk about why things have short lifespans? Mm-hmm. But I think maybe perhaps where we start with this is to just kind of talk about some of the fashion words that we're referring to, some of the various cores, some of the various trends, just to lay a groundwork on things.
Yeah. Something off your insight, and we love to see growth.
I am often wrong. Uh-huh. Disclaimer, word goblins. I am often wrong.
The only thing I'm right about is I'm often wrong.
Yeah, that's true. I stand by it. Just, I'm so smart.
Just Sadier's on plateau. What did he say? The only thing I know is I know nothing.
Yeah.
Wow, philosopher in the house.
Oh, academia.
That's funny actually that you said that, because I made Tasha take an extremely wild quiz. Of course, if you didn't let BuzzFeed declare your aesthetic, what are you even doing? This BuzzFeed quiz called "This Thorough Analysis Will Reveal Your Core Aesthetic," and I got dark academia, which I still don't know what that means.
I mean, I feel like it's fitting for you, but I have to say, like, it's so funny because the quiz was just full of like really arbitrary choices, like what bread do you like, like what dog are you interested in, et cetera. Yeah. And still I ended up with dark fairy core, which like is so funny to me that we both got dark, a variety of a dark aesthetic.
Yep. Just the edgy dudes here.
It's real. Yeah. I mean, I think also they're definitely all fashion outcomes. And something that was important, at least in researching this, was to like draw distinctions between what is a fashion trend versus what is a consumer aesthetics trend versus what it is an aesthetic.
Yeah.
I know that sounds like just so persnickety, but when we're in this world of like mass psychosis expressing itself through trend reporting, I feel like it's really important to draw lines.
Ooh, mass psychosis. I love it.
I mean, I'm still mad about having to report on every single trend.
It's giving big, like, Requiem of a Dream. Like,
yeah.
Me, 21 years old, watching that film. And
what,
like,
aesthetic was that sentence? Was it a dark academia sentence? Was it a
you
dark
will find
fairy
out.
Core sentence?
But here's the thing. I don't think we're being pedantic because this is the era we're living in, and this is what we're doing. We're doing the hard work. We're doing the labor of dissecting these sometimes insufferable trends.
Sometimes.
Sue me for being a hater. But so
don't
you,
lie like so you don't, if you're not mad all the time.
Stop exposing me. We're doing it so you don't have to.
Yeah. Not sure if it's a trend or unfounded observations gone viral. Well, let's see.
Stay tuned.
I think there's a ton of words right now that are describing what is happening in fashion subcultures, though I would say, oh, big claim here, there are no more subcultures, but rather just a singular monoculture. I'll get into that later. But there's, you know, fashion trends, which are obviously referring to things that people are wearing, hard line in the sand. I think consumer aesthetics are things that we see in, like, on album covers and on design objects, posters. Maybe this is more likened to, like, design trends. So think, like, acid graphics, which has been really popular these days. That kind of thing is a consumer aesthetic. And then hard line in the sand. What's the third one that I was talking about? Aesthetics, I think, is kind of close to what a consumer aesthetic would be, but if you spent any time at all on Reddit or on Tumblr, you'll probably... Pinterest, there's another good one.
Not to forget.
Social medias that exist as just, like, image sharing, and Tumblr specifically being this kind of, like, you know, your teenage bedroom wall full of pictures. Like, we're talking about just a variety of aesthetics derived from, like, art and media generally. And I think aesthetics is a different category because you get some really wild and granular and specific ones. For example, I'm going to butcher this because I've never actually said it out loud, but I recently got back onto Tumblr. Yay, me. I actually never used Tumblr, so I don't know why I said back. I got
That's
into it.
That's bold of you to admit in 2023.
Oh my God, here I am, 32 years old. I'm getting into Tumblr, and I follow a few hashtags, one of which
I don't
is
know.
Called...
I don't know them.
You have to now. You have this information, and you have to carry it with you. And everyone listening has to carry it with you. You should get on Tumblr. It's fun. It's called Feudiger Arrow. And it's weird to say. It's basically the aesthetic of, like, Windows Vista, which is to say, like, really shiny things.
Screensavers.
There's a lot of fish. There's a lot of, like, weird shiny digital animals. And I would say that is an aesthetic kind of similar to, like, the C-punk aesthetic or the cyberpunk aesthetic.
Okay. Tasha.
Yes.
And maybe because I'm feeling dumb today, what's the difference between something being core and something being an aesthetic?
Well, actually, you brought this up earlier because I asked you, like, what is the significance of the core suffix? And you were like, obviously hardcore, like from hardcore music. And I think that's really important to the fashion aesthetic of using core, because maybe it refers to a sort of extremism in what you're wearing and how you're expressing that trend.
Yeah, so I was trying to look up the origin of core, as I like to do that, like to go through rabbit holes and suffer. But
wow, dark academia.
It does come from the subgenre of punk culture, which was hardcore punk. And yeah, that's actually very interesting, and it's a good point that it is something which is extreme. And hey, I love it. I mean, it's just kind of like sometimes you're kind of going all in into something, and then I also dissect the etymology. It's like, what is at the core of this, right? Or like if your friend who rambles a lot is trying to tell you a long-winded story, and then you're like, okay, get to the gist, and it's ultimately like this one thing. And so we can talk about cottagecore, we can talk about barbiecore, and ultimately if I were to dissect barbiecore, I would say pink,
right?
A specific shade of pink, and it could be whatever, like you could display that whatever. If I were to talk about normcore, which is, I think, arguably one of the first times that core was used in terms of, like, fashion. And don't quote me on this, maybe wrong, but at least from what I could find, that it goes back to as early as 2014. And I actually, this is a related point. I was looking into aesthetics like a millennial, and there is Aesthetics Wiki, which is a comprehensive encyclopedia. And I was looking into their About Me page, and it says, "We are a community dedicated to the identification, observation, and documentation of visual schemata." And the way it's community sourced, the way they arrange and organize their website is you could look into trends, aesthetic, core vibe, whatever, be it through color, through images, through suffix or family, through categories, and also through decades. And that this is not new at all, right? Like, as Tasha talked about, Tasha was saying, like, back when we were in high school, like, you were the goth, or you were emo, or like, there were so many aesthetics or course that came out of, like, Mean Girls, this film that came out in 2003, or Breakfast Club, actually, from, like, 80s John Hughes films. There were these, like, archetypes, right? And there was, like, this goth girl and this, like, princessy popular girl. I don't know how else to, like, describe it. And so what I'm trying to say is, long and short of it, is that this is nothing new. And also, it's just part of youth culture, and we just want to define ourselves. We want to define others for clarity, because, I don't know, when you're, like, entering adulthood, everything's so confusing, and it is helpful to put a label on yourself, to put yourself in a box. And listen, there's nothing wrong with it. Put others in a box, because then that's also how you're able to find community, right? So I totally see the value in it. But there are too many cores. And I don't know. I feel like it's getting out of control.
So my question to you, you stumbled upon the Aesthetics Wiki, which is like, they're doing the Lord's work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they keep up, especially right now. Any ideas as to maybe how we've gotten here, given we've been able to see the variety of trends over the years and their lifespans, and sometimes even been part of them? But now it's kind of like there's just this churn of hourly words and trends coming through. And, like, what do you think? What are the reasons why you think we've gotten to this place?
Yeah, great question. Aesthetics Wiki actually came about in 2019. So it's not old at all.
That's very young.
Yeah. And so we have cores. Like, it was interesting. Like, I was reading going over their website, and it was things like, you know, find out your aesthetic or core or vibe or, like, mood board. And cores were described as, like, fairy core, cottage core, norm core, goblin core, aesthetic, etc. And then aesthetics was like dark academia or vaporwave, synthwave, and there was another one with something grandma, I don't know. But, and then clean girl aesthetic as well. But what was interesting is there were these trend analysts. It's actually someone's job, and they get paid to do it. They were talking about, and this is wild to me. I mean, yeah, I know that TikTok is really new, but because it's such a huge part of our culture now,
mm-hmm.
that it feels like it has existed for at least, like, half a decade. But actually, TikTok, I don't know when it was created exactly, but it was really popularized around the pandemic time. And TikTok really popularized the birth of micro trends. And it's actually wild because someone, and I don't know maybe if this is a simplification, but I was reading this article and someone was talking about, like, how there was, like, a whole generation and a lot of Gen Zs who grew up in those, like, 2 to 3 years. And they were all on TikTok, and, like, we just really had nothing going on, and we were all stuck at home on our phones on TikTok. And just needing entertainment constantly and seeing these fleeting trends. And we are truly living in an era of hyper-specific micro-trends,
mm-hmm.
which is wild because they're also very nebulous. Like, you try to put a pulse on the scene and try to figure out one aesthetic, but then it's like, too late. This is chuggy. Also, another word, which I don't know if people are using now that I'm on the bandwagon. Like, this is basic, but it's...
Chuggy is itself chuggy.
Yeah. Yes. And the fleeting nature of aesthetics and microtrends on TikTok especially also, like, creates issues of, like, I don't know, like, overconsumption, because I didn't realize this, but a few stuff I read online draw the comparison between microtrends on fast fashion
mm-hmm.
and, like, the need to have that aesthetic before the world moves on and forgets about it. And at the end of the day, every aesthetic has a fashion component, right? Because how else can people tell that you're part of that subculture, if that makes sense? Because I'm thinking, like, emo or punk or goth had very specific, like, a fashion component. You dressed a certain way, or people dressing up that way for Halloween. And so for cottagecore, and it's interesting that it's not just, like, brands, but, like, thrift stores, because there is a vintage component of front-end company. And one time I popped in the store and they had an entire section and they called it dedicated to cottagecore. I'm not even kidding. It was very much like those, like, flowy dresses and, like, whimsical girly vibe and, like, hats. I don't even know how to write, like, floral prints, more like neutral bells, very, like, feminine. And yeah, so it's interesting to see that bleeding into fashion, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, but specifically, like, fast fashion and brands that have a big monopoly online, like Shein, which is mm-hmm. very problematic.
But, like, Shein, I think, is a symptom of the problem. I mean, they have been around for a long time, so maybe I'm, like, eating my words here, but, like, they, as much as they are awful, that it's the logical conclusion to what's happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I think you're right in pointing at TikTok and in pointing at short-form video content, because it does a really good job of, like, plucking really niche internet aesthetics out of obscurity and serving it up to a large audience who wouldn't otherwise, like, know about it or care about it. And I think when you're comparing it to something like before people were just using Tumblr to do something like this, it was long form content, it was, like, peer to peer, and it wasn't like person based necessarily. It was not you, it was, like, your vibe. You know, so it changes when it becomes camera facing person.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes about, like, taste communities that don't stand in opposition to anything, which I think is something that I want to get into later in the show. But I guess what I'm trying to say is it seems to me like the jump from something like Tumblr, visual blogging, peer-to-peer, locker, bedroom vibes, not necessarily photos of yourself, but photos of things and debris of the internet and aesthetics that you like, and sharing that versus camera facing you and you filming yourself dressed up in those things,
mm-hmm.
not to mention how short form the content is. So it has a lot to do with the person. And it has a lot more to do with, like, marketable products in that way. Like, you can't necessarily always trace things you find on Tumblr to something you can buy, but on TikTok, its algorithm is like a recommendation machine, just tumbling through different recommendations of things that one can easily consume. And I think that easy consumption, short form video content, and person-centered content and not peer-to-peer content is why we have just so many marketable consumer trends and not just like varieties of aesthetics.
Totally. And not to forget the whole influencer culture.
Yes.
Micro-influencer culture.
Absolutely.
It's like everybody can go viral at any point ever. But yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking of my bedroom wall back when I was a teenager and us being in parasocial relationships with celebrities, because there was that distance of like, you don't know them, you can't be them, and that sort of separation. And the way we got access to their lives was through magazines. It was slow. Mm-hmm. There was a slowness attached to it, but not when I could follow a celebrity as they're eating at a restaurant because they've posted a photo on Instagram.
That's very true.
Versus me finding out that someone's dating because the paparazzi caught them a month later, which is kind of the era we grew up in, like as millennials in like the late 90s.
Yeah, proximity to celebrity culture is important too. You're right, because also like the prototypical influencer is supposed to be someone that one can somewhat relate to or aspire to be. If there is no aspirational component, like they're not really influencing. So your proximity to celebrity culture, I think, will also keep that steady churn of things to buy, to aspire to be and look like and to wear. And we just have never had it as fast as we have it now.
No.
Or close.
Totally. And it's, I'm going to say something now, which is very confusing and weird, but I'll still say
it. Yeah, this is my favorite part.
Celebrity, but influencers are the new celebrities, and celebrities have to be influencers.
I would agree with that.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's, the line is so blur, and we're in a time where we're made to believe that everything's possible and everything's accessible, but it's also kind of wild, because I was reading up on the clean girl aesthetic, and Tasha and I were talking about how it also has similar vibe of no makeup, makeup look, old money aesthetic, but a lot of like classism attached to it, because you definitely have $300 worth of products from Sephora to have this like clean look, which also clean is like loaded, but it's like I woke up like this. And when I was reading this piece, they talked about models and celebrities such as Hailey Bieber and the Hadid sisters who give big clean girl vibe. So I can totally see that. Like, that's trending. It's not like in a vacuum just existing on TikTok, but it's like, what are the celebrities doing? How are they dressed up as? And now we have, and it's like, you can be this too.
And as a small digression to that, like, to be part of this celebrity circuit right now, you have to be really good at self-branding. I think when we were talking about celebrities that were aspirational even 10 years ago, they obviously had teams, and people have teams now, but they had teams that were producing pieces of media that were slow to get to us, and they were, like, really curated. And now you sort of, like, to be a celebrity, to be an influencer, you're taking photos and videos and stuff of yourself for the most part. And I know people still have teams, but like, you have to be so savvy with self-branding. And celebrities that were from a bygone era that are moving into social media have been mocked for not being able to do their self-branding as well, because I don't think that they were trained for that.
No.
And there were a lot of people who are growing up with the variety of platform media that they have at their hands that are so adept at self-branding, and they know how to position themselves online in these ways.
Yeah, that's so funny, because I was thinking for the life of me, I could never film myself talking and put it on Instagram. Like, I would be so awkward. And I have some mostly younger friends. I mean, a lot of older influencers do it too, but I mean, like, more younger friends who, again, grew up with Instagram, who are very comfortably able to just be like, oh, guys, guess what happened? And then kind of pop off and tell the story. And it's entertaining. It's engaging. And I would listen to it. But then we talked about this earlier in one of the episodes, the millennial pause, where you can tell that they're awkward because they're not used to filming themselves and talking in real time. Guilty of that.
Think of people who are used to a camera being positioned in front of them and then asked a question versus people that are used to holding a phone in front of their faces and beginning to talk. Like, that's the shift that we've made.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we feel very close to people and, yeah, parasociality. But for the most part, we feel a lot closer to the people that we should still consider celebrities in their little Disney world than we ever have before.
Yeah, I feel like there is... it creates a delusion.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah, like, everything's possible and you can do everything. But, like you said, they have a team, which we often don't think about.
Yeah.
Or which is not often talked about. Celebrities like Kim Kardashian filming their house and everyone really into the beige core. Was it beige core? Beige aesthetic? Who knows? Or there was a time when, like, everybody wanted to look like the Kardashian sisters with, like, lip fillers and that certain kind of makeup look, right?
Yeah, Instagram face. I'm stealing that from...
Sure.
Yeah, someone.
Okay, Instagram face. I'm into it. Yeah, shall we take a break?
We shall. Who's that?
Hey there! Do you like sweet and sentimental stories and songs?
Do you enjoy a pleasant chat and a giggle with pals? Then you're gonna love our show, Love Notes, here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Every week, a new guest selects a great love of their life, a sibling, a romantic partner, a best friend, and we get to make a show about the stories and songs that make up their love.
Join us on this journey for the ears and the heart every other Tuesday at 10 a.m.
Kick off Pride celebrations with a show full of awesome local talent. Come watch the iconic Devours performing with special guests Masank, Soyjoy, and Tough Sell at Green Auto Body's outdoor stage on August 4th. Doors are at 7 p.m. and this event is 19+. For tickets and more information, you can go to the Eventbrite page, which can be found in the link of devours.ufo's Instagram. This is an event you won't want to miss out on. Massey Art Society is calling visual artists to send exhibition proposals for their 2024 programming. If you work through painting, drawing, photography, installation, media, or performing arts, send them your ideas for an upcoming exhibition. They work in a collaborative environment offering a cost-free space in the downtown East Side and support in promotion and communication, as well as honorariums, working on a 2-month-long exhibition contract. Send the proposal in a single PDF file to Massey Arts Curator and Community Arts Coordinator Raphael Zen at community@masseyarts.com. The call for submissions will be open until August 15th, Tuesday at 11 p.m. PST. For more information, go to Massey Arts Society on Instagram. Drill Events is hosting the official after party for Pride Vancouver with talent like local DJs such as Haina from China, Njoki and Joki, Nalule, Dr. BPM, and so much more. There will be go-go dancing from Vancouver and a resident DJ from Mexico City. This night is to showcase queer liberation and freedom of expression, happening on August 5th. For more information, go to Drill Events on Instagram.
Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to Rory Goblins, only on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Your tired little goblins, barn on fire, etc., etc.
Just in the ditch, digging for words, covered in dirt.
Yeah, so we just took a short break, and we've got about 15 more minutes to share our wisdom.
Yeah.
In big, in giant.
Adjust my mic.
Giant air quotes, I say.
Yeah. So we were discussing the ceaseless churn of trend cycling, and we were talking about its connections to TikTok, to short form video content. We talked about how Aesthetics Wiki popped up in 2019 mm-hmm. to document just the endless roll of words and core suffixes to add onto the backs of things. And we landed in this place where we were talking about influencers and celebrity culture. And I think that leads really nicely into something that I want to talk about that is like a little bit, it's not a digression. It's like, it's me digging a little bit deeper into the analysis. Like, sue me. I like doing this.
Do it.
You're going to have to listen to it. You can go somewhere else if you don't want to listen to it.
You just
That's
like
fine.
Being deep about stuff.
I do.
I'm with you here.
I think what we're seeing right now is that a lot of meaning has been lost in the visual algorithmic landscape, and something that we've sort of been very thinly veiling our anger about in this whole episode is this like lack of meaning. There's like a lack of depth, and it's funny for a show where we try to like mine for depth in small tidbits of culture, but something that I've noticed about the trend cycle right now, and maybe why I'm annoyed at all the reporting on it, is that there seems to be so many taste communities, but they don't really stand in opposition to anything. And I think something that I'm used to when it comes at least to subcultures or aesthetic components is that they were once integral to the formation of subculture, and they once had sort of political leanings. Mm-hmm. And in this cycle that we're in, things have all but been sterilized to become viable commercial products.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's pretty clean to see, like, because we were talking about the Barbie phenomenon on the break here, and it makes sense that something that is so sterilized from having any political meaning or any subversive element to be so closely aligned to a movie like Barbie, like, nothing against Barbie, and I'm not against having fun sometimes, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I just think that it is like the perfect metaphor that now we're seeing a lot of like Barbie elements cropping up in trend cycles. Something that I think everyone has been talking about, and I will bring it up again just because it's interesting, and it seems to me that we just can't get away from it, is the 80s piece by Guy Debord, Society of the Spectacle, which the basic concept being that we are living in a society, I think this is where this joke comes from, that mm-hmm. favors appearances over policies as an effect of contemporary capitalism. And I have a quote here that feels pretty like representational as to what we're talking about, where he writes, in societies where modern conditions of production prevail, all of life presents itself as an immense accumulation of spectacles. Everything that was directly lived has moved away into a representation. And I think that this component of something that is directly lived, that we once had to form a subculture around and have sort of like political meanings and emphasis and music and art and culture to bolster it, mm-hmm. has now fallen away just to become representations of those things. And I see that in like renewals of like maybe the emo aesthetic, or renewals of any sort of like hippie punk mod subculture that once existed in history, that like, yeah, for the most part, there were a lot of people that would jump on straight edge And some things can always not be deep and always just be kind of for fun. But the core element of these subcultures were to be subversive in some way to society. And now we're just seeing spectacle. Mm-hmm. And I have a problem with spectacle generally because it's so marketable and it's so shallow.
Damn, my dude. Well, first of all, that was Dark Academia. That was giving.
I was like, how Dark Academia was that? Because I don't think it was Dark Fairy Core at all.
That was giving Dark Academia,
Thank
first of all.
Thank you so much. My quiz was wrong.
And second of all, that was great. I honestly, it did spark a lot of thoughts in my brain as you were talking. We are so desperate to ascribe meaning to anything and everything, but ultimately, a lot of things are vapid, you know? And I think that's when I get disgruntled because I'm like, okay, so this new trend popped up. I'm curious. Like, I want to know. And then the more you look into it, the more it's devoid of meaning. And that's when I get mad because I'm like, okay, I got played. And as you were not to like romanticize 80s and 90s, but a lot of aesthetics, a lot of cores had strong philosophies, mm-hmm. and manifestos, and it wasn't just an aesthetic. And for me, aesthetic, when I say aesthetic, I mean purely visual. And so if someone was emo, it wasn't just like how they dress, but it was the kind of music they listened to, a bit about their personality as well. But now I think things are more kind of like whatever meets the eye versus like it doesn't matter. And that I find confusing because when I always joke about like, oh, like I was an emo kid, it wasn't so much just about like what I wore, because that for me is mostly an afterthought, but it's kind of like, I don't know what to call it, but kind of like what I resonated with in terms of like the subculture out there and what made me feel most seen, quote unquote. And we don't really see it anymore. And I don't think you're wrong when you say that all these like micro trend reporting, like I get it. It's interesting and entertaining to like keep a pulse on the scene. But then ultimately it is not memorable. And yeah, like it's cool to document subcultures and stuff. But then looking back, it's just sort of like, I don't know. A hay in the stack,
yeah,
situation,
exactly.
And we look again. I was thinking of straight edge culture, where it was so powerful, and it was this whole like social movement in a lot of ways, where they had a political leaning, had this philosophy, and people still identify with that. But I don't think 20 years from now, someone's going to be like cottagecore. Is my vibe.
Yeah, because they don't stand like to oppose anything.
They don't stand for anything.
It stands to sell something.
Yeah.
And there's this, there's also this process of recuperation, which is talked about in the Society of the Spectacle, which is a process by which subversions that critique the spectacle are decontextualized over time. So they're sterilized to remove that like potency or that ability to disrupt something, which like, let's be honest, like not all trends and subcultures are like truly disrupting society, but I think in some small way these movements did their small things to disrupt and to like stand against things. And I see more recuperation than I see disruption in the current trend cycle. And I'm not here to full stop criticize it because I don't think everything needs meaning. But furthermore, maybe this is just a moment in which we're seeing like fashion as a way to disrupt is no longer a viable option because it's kind of dead. Not to declare something dead again, like malls are dead and painting is dead and print is dead.
Journalism is dead.
But journalism is dead.
No, it's not.
But like maybe in some way, fashion as a way of disrupting, fashion as a powerful tool is dead. And maybe it's good that it's dead because how has it been serving us since, you know, it's been kind of sterilized over the years. Anytime there's a social movement, there's a way for like H&M to capitalize and put feminism on a t-shirt. Like,
oh yeah.
It's not a way of protest anymore.
Target selling trans pride shirts.
Yeah, exactly. Like we're critical of these things. And so.
Yeah. Would you say subcultures are dead?
Yeah, I would. I would. And I've said this in private. I haven't said this in public, so I feel kind of nervous about it. But I do think there are no true subcultures anymore. And I do see that there's like a digital monoculture because digital life is regular life now. There's no distinction. And I'm not sure where that's going to take us. But like, I am annoyed by the trending and the reporting on trending when it's something that doesn't feel like it has any depth anymore. And maybe the reporting should be more on like the abundance and the ways in which some trends can be glommed together to have meaning and not just every new thing that pops up that we need to point our fingers at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about y'all. I am hella confused.
I'm tired.
And something to think about is that not everything has to be for everybody, but we live in an era which, I don't know, maybe this is a far reach, but I'm thinking back to like toxic positivity and my criticism of that in one of the episodes. And we are in an era where we want to make everything for everyone and ultimately it's for nobody.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking with a lot of these micro trends where you like everyone can kind of adopt it and mimic it and look the same on Instagram, but like what does it mean?
Like it shouldn't be organized for mass consumption,
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And obviously not to like be gatekeepy, but then it's also just kind of lost in the crowd, if that makes sense. And yeah, that was the end of my thought.
Yeah, like it's difficult to determine value in the like cyclical hype or in outsized coverage of literally every passing thing. And maybe we just need to get back to a place where we're taking it a lot slower.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I think it's a problem when it's easy for any cultural phenomenon to be like plucked out and then like organized into some tidy category to be able to be sold for mass consumption. Like I think that is a problem, and I don't think that trends and subcultures should be something that can like be easily purchased, which is not to say that things can't be for everyone. I just don't, the treatment of it makes it feel like we're all just like spectators ready to like dump all of our meaning into one thing.
Mm-hmm. And also, I don't know, feels like we as a society are passive and very susceptible to the algorithm. You go to explore page on Instagram and TikTok, and then you kind of find out like, oh, there is this new video that went viral about someone talking about clean girl aesthetic, and then even if it doesn't make sense, you kind of have to jump on the bandwagon, and then you see that like churned out in like podcasts and think pieces and essays to the point where it's like, okay, I am angsty about this.
Yeah, I have closed my brain. I think my final thought for this, as you were talking, I realized that it's not that everything needs to have a ton of weight and meaning and like political leaning towards it, even though I don't feel like that would be a bad thing.
It's okay to be silly sometimes.
It's okay to be silly sometimes. But I think every cultural object has a ratio of how much it should be analyzed versus how much it is just there for entertainment. and remembering that there is some sort of ratio for every culture object that kind of gets plucked out of obscurity and then like thrown into the cycle and then hyped for like a week. Like, how much energy are we going to put into analyzing it versus being merely entertained by it? And if it is just entertainment, if it is just spectacle, then I think that it's okay to just move on.
Mm-hmm. Wise words. Yeah, I will say by doing this episode, I came into this episode with a lot of hashtag confusion brain. Yeah. But now I am able to have some clarity of like, these are micro trends and we need to call them what it is. They are not subcultures. They're not subgenres. Because by conflating those two, we're also doing disservice to like actual subcultures and actual subgenres, which had a lot of meaning for communities.
That's very true.
For marginalized folks, like we talked about in the drag episode, like that subculture.
Yeah, the idea of disruption and you know.
Yeah, standing against the status quo.
Yeah.
Being subversive.
And the aesthetics were part of that. The aesthetics were a core part of that too. It literally has to do with how you're presenting yourself in the world.
Yeah.
So there are ways in which we need to hold on to the importance of those subcultures, of subculture in general. We just have to get through the mess that is like the race to name the next aesthetic as if it were Bloodsport.
Yeah, and not to mention, we are nearing the end of our time, but going back to like cottagecore, which is a lot of like simplification of like farming life and like romanticizing a certain working class lifestyle, which is really problematic.
Yeah.
And of course, there's no pushback to that because it's not really disrupting anything.
Yeah. It reminds me, when I was doing research for this, I don't have the exact title, but I found a Guardian article from 2012 that was about the C-punk aesthetic on Tumblr, and it said, like, scenester in-joke or cultural movement? And I was like, neither, dude.
No.
Neither. This was the beginning of the end.
That's a great note to end on. Okay, folks, that's it. Goodbye.
Bye.